All right, welcome to the free stretch here on JoeBucksFan.com. I am Bobby Fenton, week 9, bye week edition of the show coming at you today. But we still have a lot to get to, even without a game upcoming this weekend. Of course, the game we are coming off of against the Saints, a 36-27 loss in the Superdome, had quite a bit to talk about, so we'll definitely cover that. But even with no game this weekend, we're also going to look ahead to the second half of the season, and it is neatly divided almost into halves. You can't have perfect halves with 17 games now, but the Bucks get that bye week right in the middle after playing 8 games. They have 9 more to go when they come back in a couple of weeks, and between now and then, hopefully, we'll see the return of several players and things like that, and we will talk about those on the show today as well. But we come today here on Joe Bucks Fan with the team record sitting at 6-2, and if I had told you before the season started, Bucks are going to be 6-2 going into the bye week, I think most of you would have said, I'll take that. Not all of you. Some of you all thought the Bucks could go 17-0 or maybe 16-1. I heard talk like that. And they can still finish with a hell of a record looking at the upcoming schedule. But I think some of you may have said, nah, 6-2, we should do better. And you know what? Honestly, they could really be 7-1 right now. Like, looking back over what's happened this season, you know, I don't want to say I'm disappointed at all, because I would absolutely have taken 6-2, not just if you had told me before the season, but even right now. Yeah, I'm happy with 6-2. But, you know, I said after the Rams game, when they lost that one, that you win some, you lose some. You can't get too wrapped up in this stuff. And, you know, people have really short memories about them winning the Super Bowl last year and how, well, we remember they were 11-5, first of all, but second of all, there was a point where they were, what was it, 7-5, I guess? And it didn't feel like anything remotely resembling a championship season, and yet they did it. And I'm not saying that's the recipe or that's the pathway to doing it. You don't want to do that all the time. I'm just saying, you know, you can't get wrapped up in, oh my God, we lost. Now, you know, obviously we've all been football fans for a long time, so if you're listening to this show, you've probably experienced it all the way all of us have, where, you know, every week you live and die with that week's result, and you lose perspective on the big stuff. It's easy to do. It's one of the reasons I like football, to be honest with you, because you don't play as many games, and the games feel more important. They feel like you feel like you're learning more from each game. Each game feels like it's telling you more than a baseball game or a hockey game where you just shrug no matter what happens, and you're like, okay, cool, whatever, we got 300 more of these. You know, football's not like that, and I love that. But it does lead to overreaction. And so I think the biggest thing with this game, I mean, the Rams game, I forgot about that game like 5 minutes after it ended. Not their day, really good team, tough spot. Again, win some, lose some. But this one, the only thing I would say that bothers me is the ones where you feel like you really should have won the game. And I don't mean that they deserve to win the game, because that they certainly did not. But they really could have won that game. And so many preventable things happened. And most of it they did to themselves. Some of it the Saints did to them. And some of it the officials did to them. And I'm not blaming the officials for the loss, but there was some tough calls there. And the penalty disparity is mostly the Bucks' fault, but it wasn't all the Bucks' fault. So anyway, the point is, just really sloppy. Whenever you play that kind of a game where you're so sloppy, a ton of penalties, bad turnovers, on and on and on, and you still have the lead late, and even after you lost the lead, you have the ball in your hands, only needing a field goal with plenty of time, you're like, man, we could still win this game, and then you don't. You're really regretful after that. So that's the main feeling I had coming away from that game, was just, you know, they really could have done that, even despite all the sloppiness. And if they had cleaned up their act even just a little bit, they would have gotten the win. But, you know, looking at the game, obviously the story coming in was Jameis Winston and all that stuff, and to see what happened, I'm truly sorry about what happened to Jameis Winston. I really do feel bad about that. Didn't want to see that. You know, the whole story beforehand was facing Jameis for the first time as a member of the other team where he's actually playing. And he had been, we talked on last week's show, pretty good, and the Saints have been pretty good this year about finding ways to mitigate his turnovers. He had really cut down on them and all that stuff. I was hoping he'd have a bunch on Sunday. I was not hoping he would get hurt, and the play he got hurt on, of course, was Devin White bringing him down, using the back of his jersey up high around the collar. He didn't grab the shoulder pad collar, but by rule, grabbing the back of the jersey at the nameplate is also considered a horse collar. So that was not an incorrect call by the letter of the rule. I know Devin White felt badly about that. But then Trevor Siemian comes in, and look at Trevor Siemian's final numbers, because it feels like he was King Kong when he came in there. He was 16 for 29, 159 yards, and the one touchdown. And, you know, it felt like way more than that, but you know, he didn't exactly slice and dice them. There was a really big sequence, and I always talk about before the half. You know, you go in before the half. Those are a big 4 or 5 minutes there in the first few minutes. Like, they call it the middle eight, the last 4 minutes before the half and the first 4 minutes of the second half. And the Saints won that on the strength of, again, some sloppiness, turnovers, and a bad call. I thought the one, you know, Tom Brady had two interceptions, right? One was the pick six that ended the final drive. But the first one was a pass that was supposed to be intended for Chris Godwin, and Mike Evans is out wide going up the sideline to clear out space, and Tyler Johnson's supposed to streak upfield, clear out space, and that creates space for Godwin to break outward. And what happened was both Godwin and Tyler Johnson got mauled at the line of scrimmage, did not let up after 5 yards. I think Johnson was getting held like 10 yards downfield. The whole play fell apart because of that, and there were bodies in places bodies shouldn't have been, and the entire pass concept that the Bucs had set up there was that was a direct result of the holding that screwed it all up, and it wasn't called. So that one left a bad taste in my mouth. But again, the Bucs had plenty of penalties on their end too. And in fact, the Saints' biggest offensive weapon wasn't Jameis Winston. It wasn't Trevor Siemian, even though, again, it felt like he came in and you know, was a whiz kid or something. It wasn't even Alvin Kamara. It was 6 first downs by Buccaneer penalties. And that really, and they scored a couple times that drives were kept alive. And oh, the Vernon Golston one, for example. That one, on the replay, it looked like his helmet was getting pushed off, which even if you're not going to call hands to the face, I don't think Golston could even see the quarterback at that point and see that the ball had already been thrown. Greg Allman has a clip of it on his Twitter feed, the Bucs beat writer for The Athletic, if you check that out. So, tough break there. But there was that one. There was Devin White had a taunting. We had the defensive holding on Russ Cockrell, kept the drive alive after third down stops. The ones on the third down stops are the worst. And the Bucs had a bunch of those. So, you know, there's all that stuff. Now, forget about that, because that's one sloppy game, and that stuff can be corrected. What's a bigger systemic issue with the Bucs right now? And again, they're a 6-2 team, so I'm not saying they have tons of issues, but they have a few. Defensively, they are not getting the pressure up front. And they're getting some pressure. They're definitely not getting the sacks, but pressure is not just sacks. They're getting not enough sacks. Last year, in fact, let me see, what they have 48 last year in 2020, and that was 7th. This year, they're right in the middle of the pack, 17th. They have 17 sacks. No, they're not in the middle of the pack. They're 26th out of 32. I reversed the numbers there. So they're not getting to the quarterback as much as you'd like. Now, they had a bunch of plays on Sunday, in fairness, where they didn't get to Siemian, but they still rushed him into incompletions, and those are just as important, and that happened a few times. But even those, this is something that NextGen Stats, and this is where they have the player tracking, and they track things like actual position on the field that people are in. They can see how fast people are running. They have the little, you know, you ever see the little dots when you go on Twitter, those plays where it has each player represented by a dot. You can see how plays unfold. Anyway, they track, they've been doing this since 2016. So it's, you know, I guess 6 seasons worth now, counting this season. The Bucs blitzed 22 times on dropbacks on Sunday. 22. Okay. You want to know how many official pressures they got out of that? Zero. It is the first time a team has blitzed that many times, the most ever, since 2016, of course, since they've been keeping track of this, that a team blitzed at least 20 times and didn't get even a pressure, much less a sack. And Ndamukong Suh did have a sack, but that wasn't on a blitz. And so they're just not getting there. They're not getting, even when they blitz, they're not creating that level of pressure. You know, the linebackers, Lavonte David, has not been nearly as good this season. Everybody was in a big rush about, you know, everybody wanted to return all the people from last year's Super Bowl team. And I remember saying, and this isn't an I told you so, I still love Lavonte David, but I remember saying, you know, he's a little older. If you, at the time I was saying you probably can't keep everybody, they did. But I was saying that one, you know, wouldn't be that big of a deal if he had to go. Lavonte David this year and Devin White combined, it's not just Lavonte David. They had 27 tackles for loss in 2020. Through 8 games this year, they have 2. And Devin White had 9 sacks last year, doesn't have one yet. Lavonte, for his part, had 3 forced fumbles last season, hasn't had one of those yet. Those are a little more random. But the point is, across the board on defense, but especially up front, and we can talk about the secondary, but at least they've had a bunch of injuries. But up front, it's a pressure. Vita Vea Remember how he was just moving people out like a bulldozer? You don't hear his name called as much the last few games. That to me is a more systemic issue that I would keep an eye on in the second half, as opposed to just a frustrating game like you saw on Sunday, where you had just bad things, penalties, turnovers, stuff like that that is not carry over week to week. But looking overall ahead. Oh, one other thing, Tom Brady. That's the 38th time he's had a four-touchdown game. He's 36-2 now in those games. He was 36-1 before Sunday in games where he threw four touchdown passes, so that's never good to see. But again, anomalies happen and things like that. I will say, just for some good things on Sunday this past week, the offensive line again played really well across the board. So a lot of clean pockets, no issues there for Brady. The wide receivers had big, I mean, really big days. Chris Godwin had an awesome day, 8 catches for 140 yards and a touchdown. Tyler Johnson, in the absence of Antonio Brown and Scotty Miller stepping up, he played pretty well, made some plays. Mike Evans had a touchdown. And of course, Cyril Grayson, the practice squad guy who didn't even play college football. He ran track at LSU on the blown coverage, got what was the go-ahead touchdown at that point. From 50 yards out. So it's a good day for the receivers, good day for the offensive line, not as big of a day for the running backs, but when you get behind early, you're not going to be running as much. But offensively, you know, I can live, the one pick should never have happened, should have been called back by a flag. The Brady fumble, okay, again, stuff like that is more random than we give it credit for sometimes. And the pick six at the end was disappointing because it did look like the Bucs had a chance to win that game even after all that. But, you know, looking ahead, here's what the bottom line is. I mean, we know what it's like because it just happened last year for a team to go on the road as the wild card team, reel off three in a row in all these different places, and then go win the Super Bowl. Bucs did it, like I said earlier in the show. Doesn't mean you want to do it again. If the Saints win this Sunday and the Saints play the Falcons at home, they're a 6-point favorite. So assuming the Saints win that, which is not, you know, for sure, but if they do, both teams would be 6-2. Technically, the Saints would be in first place as of now because of the head-to-head tiebreaker. The Bucs and Saints play again on December 19th in Tampa. But let's say the Saints beat the Falcons this weekend. That leaves them both at 6-2, both with 9 games to go in the season. 4 of the games are the same for both teams. The Bucs and the Saints both have the Panthers and Bills at home and go on the road to the Jets and the Falcons. That's 4 games. Then, of course, the Bucs and Saints play each other. That's the 5th game. Of those remaining 4 games, there is a disparity, and the Bucs have this advantage not just on the Saints, but all over Green Bay, Arizona, Dallas, and pretty much everybody, because the Bucs have one of, if not the easiest remaining schedule in the NFL. The Saints have, besides the games that are common between them and the Bucs, have the Eagles, who are 3-5, the Cowboys, who are 6-1, the Titans, who are 6-2, and the Dolphins, who are 1-7. Then you've got the Bucs. Oh, that's a combined record of 16-15 for the remaining Saints opponents that they don't share with the Bucs. The Bucs and 3 of 4 are on the road, but they're at Washington, 2-16. Giants at home on Monday night, 2-16. At Indianapolis, 3-5 team. At Carolina, 4-4 team. Okay? So if the Bucs, and order number one is win a freaking game against the Saints, so win that game on December 19th, Sunday night at home in Tampa, where you're going to have the quarterback edge for sure, among other things, because Jameis is out for the year, and you would have had it even if Jameis was playing. Win that game, and then you have to perform better than the Saints, or at least as well as the Saints, in that slate that I just reeled off compared to us and them. There's no reason, and I never go into like win-loss, we're going to go down the schedule. I never do that. Even once we get into the season, I try not to do that. But now that we're this far in the season, we've seen all these teams, and the Bucs are already 6-2 with these 9 games left. There's no reason the Bucs shouldn't be able to go something in the neighborhood of 13-4. And I'm not putting a target on a certain number because you're going to lose games you didn't think you'd lose in the NFL, especially with 17 games now. It happens, and it's not the lie. The Bucs aren't going to go 15-2. But with these 9 games left, to go 6-3, for example, in those 9 games, which is a totally realistic expectation, that would put them at 12-5. Right now, if I told you Bucs are going to go 12-5, you probably would say, I don't think I would take it. I think I'd hold out for 13-4. Like, if you told me they could go 13-4, take it right now or take your chances, I'd say, look, lock in 13-4. I'll take it. I would not do that with 12-5. But there's no reason they shouldn't be at least 12-5 looking at this remaining schedule. And it's just the way it works out this year with the Bills and the Saints being the only two teams they have left with winning records. So we'll see how it goes. But even despite this loss, and again, nobody's happy about it, it is pretty nice for the Bucs at least lining up where they don't have to play a lot of the studs around the league that some of the other teams will. And if you look around, I mean, look at Green Bay right now. Aaron Rodgers is out this week for their game against the Chiefs. This is all assuming the Bucs win the division and they're not a wild card team. You know, you don't just want that division. And now there's only one bye, remember, not two. So you want to be the number one seed and have that bye week. You know, Green Bay is going to be, and we'll see how this Rodgers thing pans out. But and by the way, that's a whole other thing. I want to like Aaron Rodgers, but like there's just always weird stuff surrounding that guy. You know, the whole story now, if you hadn't heard, he's tested positive for COVID, which can happen to anybody, even if you're vaccinated or not. But he also used, I don't want to say shady, he used very duplicitous language, maybe, early in the season when he kind of shrugged off the whole vaccination thing and made it sound like he was, but he's really just trying to say that he wasn't without saying he wasn't. Turns out he wasn't. And so now there's a whole controversy about how much of the protocols and stuff were followed for unvaccinated players and vaccinated players. Whatever. Point is, Green Bay got that nice win against the Cardinals the other night. They're going to be without Aaron Rodgers when they play the Chiefs this weekend. You know, Arizona's still tough. The Bucs have a head-to-head tiebreaker against Dallas, which will be nice to have, hopefully, because Dallas doesn't look like they're going anywhere. I'm looking ahead here and looking at the issues the Bucs face, and even with the issues they face and looking at the remaining schedule, I think I would rather be us right now than, like, forget about who you're a fan of. I'm just saying, looking at each team as far as the strength of their roster, as far as who they have coming up playing, and as far as where the standings are right now, looking at those three things, who would you want to be right now? From a completely objective standpoint, forgetting that I'm a Bucs fan, I really do think I would choose to be the Bucs as far as the most likely team. I still think the Rams, even though, you know, the Cardinals are just got their first loss, still think the Rams set up well in the NFC West. They're probably the one I'd want to be second, to be honest with you, and then maybe Dallas behind that, and Green Bay. I still don't trust Green Bay's whole scene with that weird offseason they have and Rodgers being weird about everything and all this stuff. I know they got a great win in Arizona, but it's hard to see them coming together in January. I could be wrong. And the Saints, listen, they're going to be with Taysom Hill now or Simeon. You know, Hill did practice, I think, for the first time. He had a concussion for a while, so that's why he didn't come in to the game on Sunday. And the Bucs end up facing the third string guy and still losing the game. But the Bucs are in a good spot, okay? Their biggest issues are one, like I said, and this is to me the biggest one, is on defense pressure, getting more pressure. Obviously, the penalties are an issue, not just on Sunday, but overall, but they were particularly bad on Sunday. In fact, the Bucs rank, it's not just Bucs penalties, it's that the opponents aren't getting that many against the Bucs. The Bucs in net penalty yards, as far as how many they've had versus how many the opponents had, are dead last. DFL for the kids out there, and they have a minus 275-yard net penalty differential between them and their opponents. I think the number 31 team is San Francisco, and they're like almost 100 yards less. So that's a problem, but pressure, penalties, injuries, and the injuries are getting better, so some news on that front. Antonio Brown posted on Instagram he was riding a bike, so that's something, I guess, although he was wearing a boot cast while he did it. You know, obviously that thing has to heal, but, he'll eventually get back. Scotty Miller, and this is some news that came down just earlier today. I'm recording this on Thursday afternoon, early afternoon. Sean Murphy, Bunning, Scotty Miller are set to return from IR. And the Bucs didn't have to do that just yet, but they're doing it, which tells me that they think they can get them healthy enough with the bye week coming up to get them going after the bye week. So if Murphy Bunning is back, Scotty Miller helps too. Of course, the Bucs have been okay even without, I mean, they have so many receivers that it's not that big of a deal. But having Murphy Bunning come back will be big. Jamel Dean's played really well, by the way, filling in. Carlton Davis, if you get Carlton Davis and Murphy Bunning both back in the next few weeks, to go with a improved Jamel Dean. Then things are looking up in the secondary. Then we'll come back from after the bye week here, and hopefully the Bucks can sink their teeth into that soft underbelly of the schedule. So, you know, this week, always nice to have the bye week. Of course, with the way the Bucks have been playing primetime games and late games and things like that, or Thursday night a couple times. We've had a few Sundays off, but this will be another one. And oh, don't forget the time change, by the way. So that'll be fun to have the fall back. We get an extra hour, but on top of that, I used to be... Let me talk about the time change for a second, unrelated to football. I used to be a big fan of having the time be daylight saving time all year. Love the sun going down as late as possible. I still like it, but you know, I like just having the extra daylight. Never really cared about what it was like in the morning, just like that late afternoon, you know, 8 p.m. sunset. That always was fun to me. Then I had kids, and let me tell you something, if people who have kids know this, if you have kids, it does make bedtime a lot easier when it's completely dark out there. Trying to put kids to bed when the sun, you know, my kids are older now, so it's not as big of a deal. But when they were younger and they had bedtimes that would sometimes be, especially later in the year, you know, you can't put a kid to bed when the sun's still out there. It's tough. And it's tough to get them to buy in. And not only that, they can tell you don't have the conviction behind it. Because even I was like, it's not bedtime yet, you know. And of course, my wife's always like, well, you know, it's so-and-so p.m. It's time for bed. But I mean, you know, we're just... First of all, you stay outside longer, so you have dinner later. Everything happens later when that sun sets later. And again, I like this for the most part. It's the way I like to live my life. So I'm a night person, so I like when the night gets started a little later. And then, when, you know, if it's nighttime by 5 p.m., I feel cheated. But anyway, with the kids, you know, now it starts getting dark earlier. That whole bedtime thing starts rolling. They hate it. They can hear me right now. They're rolling their eyes. But that whole bedtime train starts rolling earlier. You can really get some momentum going into bedtime now, and it just makes it easier. So from that aspect, I understand it, but I still do like the late sunsets. And people are going to argue. Every year you have this come up where people argue about changing the clocks and, oh, we don't even need to, you know, agree on when they should be. Just let's pick one and then have it be always the same so we don't change the clocks twice a year. I think it's not that big of a deal. I'm tired of people whining about it. I kind of like having the seasons where, you know, it mixes up the year. Part of the year is this way, part of the year is that way. And I know some people act like having to change their clocks twice a year, which most people don't even have clocks anymore because the phone updates automatically, and they act like it's this huge issue. There is some research indicating that it's a little bit stressful on humanity as a whole, so I'll buy that. But individually, change your clock. Do it the night before when you go to bed, and in this case, enjoy the extra hour. And if you have small kids, welcome to having bedtime be a little bit more smooth for the next few months. I want to thank our good friends. Oh, Bill Curry Ford. Thanks to our good friends at Bill Curry Ford for sponsoring the show. As always, they take good care of us, and they will take good care of you if you're looking for a new car, a used car, a truck, van, whatever. It doesn't have to be a car. All of it's there. Go to the website first is my biggest recommendation, BillCurryFord.com. It's C-U-R-R-I-E, BillCurryFord.com. You can see everything in there. They've got the transparent online, no-haggle pricing. They will bring it to you if you don't want to leave your house or your office. Just for a test drive, you don't have to be buying it. They'll bring it to you. You can drive it. If you do make the purchase, of course, they'll bring that to you as well. But if you have the chance and you're willing, go to the lot a mile north of Raymond James Stadium on Dale Mabry Highway, and you can see everything there in person. Beautiful showroom, beautiful lot. It's all there, and it's also something that you can see on the website first, then go to the lot and go check it out after you pick out two or three maybe that you think might be contenders. So, any way you slice it, you get the unlimited nationwide lifetime warranty for the life of the car that you own. As long as you own it, you can bring it back to Bill Curry Ford. Free oil changes the first year, 10 years roadside assistance. All that comes with it. Bill Curry Ford. And check them out at BillCurryFord.com. So that's it for this week. Like I said, enjoy the bye week. It's going to be fun. Have a good time. If you're a college football fan in this state, you probably don't have much to recommend there either, whether it's FSU, Florida State, or Florida. Or USF or UCF for that matter. It's amazing how all of our college football teams can all be down at the same time. But anyway, take care of yourselves. Remember to set those clocks back. Have a great weekend. I'll be back next week. We'll be getting ready for the next and the second half of the season. Until then, thanks to you for listening. Thanks to the Joes for giving me this platform. And wherever you are, good morning, good afternoon, good night, and go Bucks.